Today, I want to talk about a substance that is all around us. This substance is statistically one of the most dangerous compounds there is on Earth, and yet it's mentioned all throughout the Bible. Some of the reasons it's so dangerous are everyone who's ever ingested it has died. If you breathe too much of it in, it can lead to your death. As a gas, it causes severe burns. It contributes to the erosion of our natural landscape and contributes to the greenhouse effect. As a solid, it can cause disorientation and loss of feeling in your extremities, and has claimed the lives of over 19,000 Americans since 1978. That being said, this dangerous chemical has many uses. It's a very common solvent, it's a great coolant, it's used in nuclear power plants, it's a fantastic fire retardant, it's used to distribute pesticides, although even after washing the produce, it is still contaminated by this chemical. And it's an additive in certain junk foods. In 1997, a 14-year-old junior high school student in Idaho presented these facts about this chemical and to his class and asked to sign a petition to ban the use of it. 86% of the students agreed. And for those of us today, there is still an online petition calling for the ban of this chemical. This chemical compound is known as dihydrogen monoxide. And those of us who aren't of a scientific mind, it's called H2O, or water. It just goes to show, it doesn't matter so much what the facts are, it's how you present them. All of these facts are true. As steam, it can burn. If you inhale water, it's called drowning. As a solid, or ice and snow, it can cause dangerous weather, such as blizzards and freezing rain. Water is amazing. Without water, there would be no life on Earth. In the book, The Wonder of Water by Michael Denton, it points out that water is the only material that can exist in all three states, a liquid, a solid, and a gas, within ambient temperatures. Due to this characteristic, water is uniquely designed to keep plants and animal life alive. Thanks to the water cycle, whereby rain falls and flows in rivers and streams to the sea, leaching out essential minerals from the rocks as it goes, these minerals are then deposited in the soil, which then the plants use, and we eat the plants. Or animals eat the plants, and we eat the animals. Along the way, some of the water is evaporated by the sun, causing clouds to form, which then drops the water over the land again in the form of rain. Thus, the whole cycle begins again. As ice, it formed in the form of glaciers, water also carves out valleys and gorges. The results of these can still be seen in many areas of high hills and deep U-shaped valleys, such as the Pyrenees and the Scottish Highlands. Water's amazing properties don't just stop at landscaping our planet, but water also plays an amazing role within the human body. A large portion of our blood is actually water. Water makes up 60 to 70% of the human body. Physically, the average human today cannot live more than 3 to 5 days without water. Bearing in mind that both Christ and Moses fasted for 40 days without food or water, but with the help of the Eternal. According to the Guinness Book of Records, the record for the longest time without food or water is held by an Austrian gentleman who survived only 18 days. Water is mentioned 396 times in the Bible and is alluded to 714 times. The real question is, what has water got to do with Pentecost? Pentecost marks the giving of the Holy Spirit to the 120 in AD 31. If we turn over to Acts 2, we'll see what happens. Just read over to Acts 2, and we'll start in verse 1. And when the day of Pentecost was fully come, they were all with one accord and in one place. And suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled all the house where they were sitting. And there appeared upon them cloven tongues, like as of fire, and it sat down upon each of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit, and began to speak with other tongues, as the Spirit gave them utterance. In chapter 1 of The Mystery of the Ages, starting on page 56, Mr. Armstrong expands on this subject a little bit. The Holy Spirit came from heaven, audibly, sounding like a mighty rushing wind. And it, the Holy Spirit, filled all the house where they were sitting. Next, the Holy Spirit appeared, was visibly seen, manifested. And there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as a fire, and it, the Holy Spirit, in the form of divided tongues, sat upon each of them. In verse 18, Peter is quoting from the prophet Joel, "And I will pour out of my spirit." The Holy Spirit, like water or a fluid, can be poured out. Can you pour out a person from one into another, as from God into those assembled there? And he quotes John 7:37-39. "In the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, If any man thirsts, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the scriptures hath said, out of his belly shall living rivers flow of living water. But this spake he of the Spirit, which they that believe on him would receive, for the Holy Spirit was not yet given, because that Jesus had not yet been glorified." The Holy Spirit has been compared with water. And just as without physical water, life on earth would not exist, so without the spiritual water, or the Holy Spirit, spiritual life would not be possible. Physical water has many properties that make it ideal for sustaining life on this planet. But what properties does the Holy Spirit have? What effects does it have on our lives? If you turn over with me to Galatians 5, and we'll read verse 22 and 23... But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. Earlier I talked about the water cycle, but here too is an analogy, as we can clearly tell from that the Holy Spirit must flow into us from God and flow out of us in outflowing love and concern back to him and to those around us. This is explained in Isaiah 55 and verses 10 to 11. If you'd like to turn to Isaiah 55. I can find it. "For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth the bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the things whereto I send it." Water has been used all throughout the Bible, both as a means of God's wrath, as well as a means many of God's blessings. Think back to the beginning of the recreation of Earth. This planet was covered with water, both as seas and in the atmosphere. In Genesis 1, right at the beginning, we see that the spiritual water, so to speak, the Holy Spirit, walked upon the face of the waters, and God said, "Let there be light." Later on, God used water, in the flood, to completely eradicate all traces of mankind from off the face of the earth, and starting a new civilization with Noah and his family. The first plague of Egypt was the turning of all the water into blood, rendering them undrinkable. Likewise, during the tribulation and the day of the Lord, all water will be made undrinkable until Jesus Christ returns and living waters issue forth out of Jerusalem, healing the waters, which mirrors the pouring out of God's Holy Spirit on all flesh. Joel 2:28. Just make a note. We've seen just a few examples of how God uses water as punishments, but we also find many examples of how God has used and will use water to bless those who obey him. We have just come out of the days of unleavened bread, picturing Israel's deliverance from the Egyptian slavery and into the entry into the promised land, Canaan. Several times during that 40-year trek around and around the wilderness, God performed miracles, providing them with water out of a rock. This could be viewed as a physical parallel to our receipt of the Holy Spirit, as Christ is referred to as our rock. And water is, of course, a symbol for the Holy Spirit. Just within the Exodus, there is six times where God uses water. First, we have the water being turned into blood in Exodus 7:14. Then we have the supernatural crossing of the Red Sea, Exodus 14:21. Thirdly, in Exodus 15:22, we have the account of the water of Mirah, where God miraculously turned the bitter water into sweet and drinkable. Fourthly, we had Moses being instructed to smite the rock, and the water came out in Exodus 17, verse 1. Number five, in Kadesh, where Moses struck the rock for the second time, but failed to follow God's instructions to the letter. Lastly, in Joshua 3, where the Jordan parts so that Israel can cross over into Canaan. So just in the course of Israel's journey from Egypt to the Promised Land, we have six separate occurrences where God used water to bless his people. One of the promises God made to his people was of plenty of good, pure water, both streams and lakes, and of course rain in due season. A noted characteristic of Canaan was that it was a land of brooks of water and fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and hills. Much like Wales. God promises to the righteous man that his waters shall be sure. In conclusion, we have seen that the properties of water are a parallel to the Holy Spirit of God. Like the water cycle, the Holy Spirit has to flow. It cannot be dammed or bottled up, but it flows from God, through us, and back to God again, accomplishing his divine purpose. Just as water transports vital nutrients to enable plants to grow, so the Holy Spirit provides us with the spiritual nutrients to enable us to grow and produce fruit. This day of Pentecost reminds us of the exceeding precious gift that we have been given, the most precious gift we will ever receive, the gift of the Holy Spirit, our spiritual water source. Let's all make sure we stay spiritually hydrated.